National Radio Club.
IDXers, welcome to Market Scope for March 2006, as we continue dialing upward on the FM band in Cincinnati from last Thanksgiving weekend. Not every station is featured, but we did get most of them.
Are awesome.
Mary with microphone.
National Men Make Dinner Night.
What?
After the official end of grilling season,
they're a quick-witted and entertaining.
Kind of lightens it up. So what are you going to make?
That's okay. It's National Peanut Butter Lovers Night. Make it up is the best part.
Oh, what did they know?
Hey.
With microphones.
It's insane is what it is.
Mornings 5 to 9 on WGRR 103.5.
Sam's Club makes holiday entertaining easier.
WGRR.
15-5 meteorologist Jim O'Brien says mostly cloudy, breezy, dry overnight tonight with a low 27. For Thanksgiving, very cold. Passing flurries, a high of 30, falling by the afternoon. And then for Friday, a cold start. Cloudy, dry in the afternoon, a high of 31.
Oldies 103.5.
Dick Bartley plays your request every Saturday night at 7 on Rock and Roll's Greatest Hits.
Oldies 103.5. You love me too.
WGRR 103.5 with some sweet soul music.
I like it.
Do you like good music?
It's a second helping Thanksgiving on Q102.
Twice the music from your favorite stars. Next
on Q102.
You. Cincinnati.
Cincinnati.
You. In music.
You. It's a second helping Thanksgiving on Q102.
An Infinity Broadcasting Station.
Twice the music from your favorite stars.
WKRQ.
Cincinnati's Q102, the American Music Awards this past week, and they grabbed two of them, but they were not there to collect them. Brain Day holiday. Cincinnati's Q102.
Turkey. Giving thanks.
It's a second helping Thanksgiving on Q102.
Twice the music from your favorite stars.
Q102.
The Tri-State's number one country station.
B105.1. Less commercial breaks. Good choice of music.
WUBE Cincinnati. B105.1.
No, she's not that she kind. Don't know she's beautiful.
B105.1. Scott Miller in for Big Dave. She let herself go. Here's George Strait. B105.1. B105.1, Feliz Navidad. Here's Martina McBride. I never promised you a rose garden.
I beg your pardon.
Hits 107 FM.
On air.
Kill me, man.
I ain't saying she a goat.
Streaming online.
Cincinnati.com.
Yes, sir.
Let's take some calls from the request line. Caller number one.
Hey, man, what's up? This is Dominique from Shady Nose Trailer Park.
What's up, Dominique?
I want to hear that song from Lil Yachty and P. Pablo.
All right, I got that coming right up for you. Now, shout out the radio station that gave you what you wanted.
W Boom Boom B, baby.
What you doing, brother?
It's Kiss 107 FM. This Saturday night, the party is on again. Club Kiss down at Red Cheetah. First 107 ladies in the door free, starting at 10. It's Mariah Carey now. Don't forget about us, Kiss.
Don't forget about us. Don't, baby, don't let it go. No, baby, don't get it out. Don't forget about us.
Kiss 107 FM.
That's our Cincinnati FM Market Scope. If you'd like to contribute to Market Scope, send your tapes or discs to me, Phil Wayne, at 313 West Spring Street, Upper Sandusky, Ohio, 43351 1652. The membership and myself would be very thankful for your help. Now, Fred is back and he's talking radio.
Last month, we introduced you to Kenneth Hill, who is a nominee for the Federal Communications Commission. And this month, we're going to finish up our interview with Dr. Kenneth Hill. Getting back to AM broadcasting, and specific to LPAM, do you see any problem with LPAM broadcasters operating small powers within small communities and rural areas where there is presently no service?
Well, when we talk about LPAM, what kind of power levels are we talking right now? Well,
we're talking 10 to 50 watts of power on a very short antenna, which tends not to radiate too far. I mean, it's probably a coverage area of 5 miles, 10 miles or more.
Well, if you're talking about something like the Traveler's Information Radio Service or something like that, I think certainly there's some accommodations could be made there, potentially. Of course, I haven't studied the issue to be able to say yes, no, maybe, or whatever. But when you take a look at what we do with Traveler's Radio or Information Radio or whatever they're calling it, Highway Service Radio or whatever, that's pretty efficient, really, for what they're doing. And it doesn't seem to create any interference where they're doing it. Now, I realize some of them are down on the low end of the band, some on the high end of the band, but I've been encountering a lot in North Carolina and Tennessee that are on midpoint in the band or anywhere else on AM. So apparently they're making some headway in that department. Also, the expanded band has not been used in an efficient manner, in my opinion. And I think the expanded band on the upper end of the AM dial should be explored, perhaps, for those kinds of things.
And another option to that, which was brought up in, I think, one of the NPRMs that the FCC had, was that this digital broadcasting, which is currently interspersed in the AM band, that perhaps a look at doing all the digital broadcasting within the expanded band and move the analog stations out of the expanded band. Is any thought to that?
Well, I think that's actually a pretty good idea. But, you know, how it plays out, I don't know. I do know that if we go with the proposed system that a number of places are using now, what are there, 600 stations, FM and AM, using that style, that you're going to wind up on AM having a lot of problems. Mm-hmm. And the interference is just too great, I'm afraid, especially in major metropolitan areas where you've got stations pretty close. Moving them to the expanded band sounds like a pretty good idea.
Well, it's even been suggested that the digital broadcasting, because comments made by, I believe it was an engineer at WOR in New York, said that they were concerned mostly with their service area, which I think the number he cited was 50 mile radius around New York City. If
you know, that's really limiting yourself, isn't it?
Well, it is, but if you're going to do digital broadcasting, wouldn't it make more sense to put the digital broadcasting up into a VHF or UHF band where it does propagate within the 50-mile radius but does not creep out into Arizona and California?
Well, that's been certainly one of the arguments brought up because of the other systems that are out there that might be beneficial, actually changing where we're doing the broadcasting. And I realize that apparently one of the considerations when this thing started early on was we wanted to maintain the same frequency so folks can find us on the dial. I think that the American consumer is a lot smarter than that and doesn't necessarily need us to coddle them. I do think, though, there is a problem when you're talking about billions of radio sets out there that are going to be changed over, especially worldwide as we're already seeing it. There's going to be some backlash if we're not careful as far as broadcasters go when we change over and make people have to go buy expensive receiver sets.
Mm-hmm. Which is indeed a problem because on the television side, we're seeing that right now with people not necessarily embracing digital broadcasting on television. And there you have a platform where channels are actually moving. In the case here in Lima, we're going from channel 35 down to a VHF channel 8. And try to educate the public is it can be a task, but they soon grasp on and buy their receiver and are able to get their digital signal.
Well, now, are you finding that the consumers there in Lima, Ohio, are they buying a lot of these receivers, or is it going slowly still?
It's still going slowly, and what we found out is that in some communities, our company happens to own a station in Boise, Idaho. The Boise market was a demand aspect. Broadcasters were forced into going into their digital high power very quickly because people went out and bought the product and wanted the high-definition sets. In our small community, I think they're going to be hanging on to analog sets well into 2009. As I've been saying to numerous groups and such talking about digital broadcasting, if you have something of intellectual nature or sporting events, it's great to watch in HD, but nobody's going to get excited about watching Oprah in big screen. So,
or watching reruns of Andy Griffith, probably.
They're exactly right. So you have to have the content and also the end user who's demanding that 16x9 $7,000 television in order to justify the switch to broadcasting. And at least in our station, we're talking some megabucks to build a high-power digital TV station.
One of the friends that I have out in Oklahoma City that's an engineer out there, was an engineer with a TV station for years. I think he's retired now. He was telling me a couple of years ago, maybe even a year ago, that all the stations there had turned their transmitters off, their digital transmitters off at that time, because there was only one digital set over the air in Oklahoma City. So they just turned it off. They hadn't found any users. Of course, I don't know how they could track it to the nth degree to find one, you know, versus hundreds. But that's what he told me nonetheless. Of course, now you're under a different rule, I guess.
Right. Most digital stations, or I should say most broadcast stations, have to have their high-power digital TV stations on by July 1st. So everyone is in the final running to make that big switch.
You know, one of the things, too, you were asking me about things coming before the commission, this thing of indecency and indecency broadcasting is certainly something that's going to be out there for a while. The commission, as it sits now, has taken no stand further than what they've done in the past, but the lawmakers are trying to take a stand to penalize both the broadcast licensee and or the network, and then we can go and or the person who does the indecent thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be interesting to see what the Congress hands the FCC, because remember, the FCC is charged by Congress to take the law and make it into rules and regs that can be followed by the broadcaster in this case, or the telecom people, or whomever. And so that's going to be coming up. Also, if you've been watching any of the hearings in the last session of Congress, what you saw was the NCTA, I think that it is the National Cable Television Association, NCTA. They were there in hearing before the Commerce Committee of the Senate, telling them how much they've done to bring family broadcasting to cable. That's another issue that is going to be in the forefront, I think, in the next year or so at the commission. The idea of the smorgasbord, the family tier, or some such thing as that, that will be offered on cable all across the board. And, of course, the comments that have been received thus far that I've heard that might ring in a lot of people's ears is the fact that they don't want to pay more to have decent family-quality programming when they will be getting fewer channels than they get now for the lesser price. So that's going to be up there, too. Also, I don't know how many stations your group owns, and certainly there are a lot of ownership of many stations in small markets and large markets. Media ownership, of course, is being revisited now, and will probably continue to be revisited for some time, and until they come up with some solution that will be reasonable, I guess, for the court system. They're going to be doing that. So those are some of the issues coming up, and a lot of those things I don't have an answer for. I'm not pretending to have a preconceived notion on most of them, because I have a lot of questions, and I'm on the outside looking in at this point. I want to, if I get on the inside, I want to be sure to take a good look at all these things and come up with what is fair and what's going to be good for the public.
Well, you bring up a good point there, and one of the things which is always kind of puzzled me was a comment made by Michael Oxley, who's a congressman of the 4th District in Ohio, who, when questioned about consolidation, said that it was his feeling that radio was going downhill at the time. This is pre-1996, and that the only way radio would survive is with these large clusters and large corporate owners. Yet I get the feeling from listening to our DX Audio Service members and my own personal listening, there seems to be a ratio that I guess if it's a large corporation that's running a station, and I won't pick on anyone, but they seem to do less public service, less news, less weather and sports. It's the little mom and pops that actually cater to the community. And that, to me, seems a little odd. That on one side of the coin, the government and Congress is saying, well, you have to be a big corporate broadcaster to own a radio station, yet the public service seems to be with the mom and pops.
Well, I think also it's how you define public service. In the larger groups, they seem to define public service by some huge ad campaign that crosses into their ownership of outdoor advertising, television, radio, newspapers, etc. That's one set, I guess, of public service. However, what we found in our stations, especially those in Jefferson City, Tennessee, and Abingdon, Virginia, which are local stations, one with 500 watts a day and the other with 1,000 watts full-time, what we found is we've got to be involved in sports, we've got to be involved in the community, we've got to have our people out there at the various press conferences and the county commission meetings, etc., so that we can bring something to that community that they cannot get from anywhere else. And that does not mean that we do it better than anybody else. It just means that we do it. We're out there doing what needs to be done so the local community can know what's going on and they can be prepared, whether it be for a disaster, whether it be for the school vote, or whatever the case may be.
I don't like putting people on the spot, but I have to ask a very pointed question at this point. And that is, given the chance or given your vote on the commission, would you vote to have the 7-7 rule, or even maybe something a little tamer as the 15-15 or 20-20 or something, having some cap on limits of ownership in markets?
I think that I'm predisposed toward something far smaller than what they have now. I don't know that I would be at a 7-7-7 or 15-15-15, whatever, but I think that there are some, perhaps some markets that need help in ownership, and there are many more that don't. For example, and I'll use our group as an example, we have four AM stations in the same market. Now, we have never made a dime in profit. We have spent everything that we, because we're nonprofit. I mean, you know, so we've never made a dime in profit. In fact, we've lost money most years. But we've done it because we wanted to resurrect these stations and give the people something of a local community voice. And so here we are with a 10,000-watt radio station or a 1,000-watt radio station or 500-watt radio station trying to reach community people, trying to get the news out, trying to do book reviews that might be of assistance to people to let them know what's going on in the schools and weather and whatever. And so in our case, I look at this and I say, well, you know, this is a cluster. But there's no way that these stations would have even been alive. They would never have even been on the air because we got them when they were dead and resurrected them and put new equipment in them and all that. If they had been single ownership, which they were before, they went dead. Now, they went dead in most part because they were small AM stations. And AM stations have been on the rocks for quite a while. And so we came in, we resurrected them. If we could only have had one station in the market, we could have only resurrected one station. If we could have had two or three in the market, that's what we could have done. So I see that there may be some fudge factor there, leeway there, but I believe we have to watch it when we have any one corporation that has 1,200 radio stations or 2,000 radio stations. I'm looking here on a piece of paper I printed off the FCC webpage before we began the interview, and it shows the broadcast station totals. There are 13,599 radio stations, not including FM translators and low-power FM. If we take the educational FM stations out, there's apparently 10,900 or so stations, about 11,000 stations that are commercial in the United States. Now, if you'd look at 11,000 and somebody has 10%, is that too many? If they have 20%, is that too many? If they own all the major FM stations in a market in the top 100, is that too many? You know, that's something that they have to come to grips with at the commission. And I'm of the opinion that mom-and-pop stations do a very good job of local community resources. I think that there are places where the large guys do a good job, and they can prove that. And I think that we have to be very open to this. One of the things that I've noticed in the last few years is we've made rules at the commission and other places as well, and yet never have followed up to see what impact those rules have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing the court was saying when they remanded this to the FCC to rework it, was that they said, hey, what impact is this having on the local communities? If we're really, truly going to be serving the interest, convenience, and necessity of the community, which is the old saying, you know, back from the 1930s, then we have to evaluate. I'm sure that at your job, and certainly with this audio program that you do, this audio magazine that you put out, you check to see its impact. We have to do metrics, as they call it. We have to do numbers. We have to know what we're doing. We have to check impact on these various rules that the commission and other groups promulgate.
Dr. Hill, you've said some very wise and I say good things about broadcasting. And if some of our members really feel strongly about getting you onto the commission seats, what can our membership do to maybe further the process, put a couple recommendations in, so to speak?
Well, I certainly would appreciate that. The number one thing is that the president has to put my name in as being an appointment to go before the Senate Commerce Committee for approval, and that's the president's call. Certainly, he has to make that decision. And so I would encourage that if someone wishes to support my effort, that they contact the office of the president and simply mention the fact that there's a need for this person, me, Kenneth Hill, to be on the commission. And if they want to say why, then certainly we'd love for them to take a look at our history and why we should be on there. Also, I would encourage those individuals that might have an interest in assisting us in contacting their senators in particular. Now, if you want to contact your congressman, that's fine. But senators, especially those senators on the Commerce Committee, are key. For example, Senator Stevens, who's chairman of the Commerce Committee, came out prior to Christmas asking for nominations to the FCC that he might bring to the president. And he is the one individual, the first individual in line when it comes to advising the president on who will come through the Commerce Committee. But Senator Allen, for example, and other senators on that committee are equally important. If you have a senator that's on that committee, they're in your state, please contact them. If not, feel free to write them anyway. Send them emails. They'll be happy to hear from you.
If your senator is not necessarily on the committee, is it wise to say, contact them and say, please get in touch with your colleagues and make this recommendation?
Oh, absolutely. That's a very good thing to do. And that's what a number of people that I've talked to in the last little bit have done. Now, Fred, I'll tell you, we we had our name submitted by Senator Bill Frist a number of months ago, and it has sat there, and we know that. And it was time for us to raise our voice just to let people know what was going on. And we're so excited that folks like you have come alongside to let us tell our story.
Well, I thank you for telling your story, and it's been very interesting talking with you, and I hope that we have an opportunity in the future perhaps to do an interview with you as a commissioner for the FCC.
It would be my pleasure.
Kenneth, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Fred.
The DX Audio Service, Musings from Members. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect the views of the DX Audio Service, the National Radio Club, the editors, or publishers. Members may muse by calling the Action Line 24 hours a day.
Hello, DXers. This is Tom Jackson, or TJ the DJ. Hey, as far as WSQR changing frequencies, this is January the 24th, and so far they haven't changed frequencies from 1560 to 1180. And I've tried to call the station to get information, and they just play dumb with me. They claim they don't know anything about it. They're just announcers. They don't have a clue. I got a question to ask Fred or anyone who can answer it for me. Why is it that on weekends is there this big influx of infomercials for these cure-all medicines that will claim to cure everything, wonder drugs and medicines, you hear it more on the AM side. All right, have a great day, guys.
Hello, fellow DXers. Wayne Ryan in Brantford, Ontario. Christmas Day, I was in the Toronto suburb of Etobicoke, and I picked up a station on 1380 that had Spanish programming. Well, I'm not quite sure where it came from. We've had a format change at 1230 WECK, Cheektowaga, New York. They went from The Music of Your Life to 55 years of number one country classics the first week in the new year. I'm wondering about the situations in Chicago, who's going to be working with Eddie Farmer on the White Sox games. And in St. Louis, I wonder where Wayne Hagen is going now that John Rooney got that job. And in Houston, Alan Ashby got fired 5 nights before Christmas. And I understand they hired two fellows who were doing minor league baseball to work along with Milo Hamilton in the coming year. And I want to say a very special word of thanks to our friend Blaine Thompson at WoWo in Fort Wayne. He sent me a tape of the last program ever that they did of Little Red Barn, and I really enjoyed it.
Hey there, DXers. Josh Owens in Reidsville, North Carolina, with a question, maybe just for Fred. I just got my DX Auto Service today, and I have a question about an AM switch item that was announced. 870 WGHC in Mount Holly, North Carolina, has moved here from Clayton, Georgia. Explain that one to me if you don't mind. I ain't quite figured that one out yet. Thank you now, and enjoy the magazine.
This is Tim Hendel, and I have some questions I'd like you to ask Dr. Kenneth Hill. I'd like you to discuss the issue of FM translators that clutter up the band. Why should a station in Twin Falls, Idaho, have a translator in Huntsville, Alabama, yet we can't have low-power FM? Why should a station in our city have a translator to fill in one little dead spot when in most of the city it means we get the station with a strong signal on two frequencies, yet we don't get low-power FM? These translators should be taken off.
Hi, this is John Jordan, Elmira Heights. Bill Hale misspoke. I don't think you can allow W's on the West Coast. He said WHTY 970. I can see KHTY, but not WHTY. So he's going to need to clear that up on the next DX Audio tape. I also want to thank Paul Burkhardt for doing it. That was an excellent band scan that he did on the January DX Audio Service. 73 is in good DX.
Hello, fellow DX Audio Service members. This is Lucille Burkhardt from Watertown, Massachusetts, with a very brief muse. I wonder if anybody has ever noticed, for example, we have had for many years Paul Harvey's commentary on WBZ. He has now moved to WTTT AM 1150. And also, Sean Hannity, who used to be heard on AM 680 WRKO, has also moved to 1150 WTTT. I was wondering if this has ever happened before with any other prominent radio personality. Happy DXing!
Hello, Fred and DX members. This is the one and only Victor speaking to you from the Schmidt House in downtown Silver Spring, Maryland. More news from the D.C. area. Attention, sports fans. The Washington Nationals broadcast will be on WTWP 1500 AM and WTWP FM. They'll have Charlie Slows doing the play-by-play and Dave Jekyll, I believe his name is, and I believe he's from the Pawtucket Red Sox radio network.
Wayne Ryan again. I'm sorry to hear of the passing of Jack Snow in St. Louis. I remember listening to him play high school football on a station in Santa Ana, California when my family lived in Anaheim in the 60s. And of course, I remember he was a great player with the Los Angeles Rams, and then he was doing radio commentaries with the St. Louis Rams at the time. Also, I picked up a station in Hazleton, Pennsylvania on 1300 in the daytime very recently. And this morning, WOOD Grand Rapids, Michigan was really coming up here between 9 and 10, and it was pushing Lancaster, New York, and Cleveland right out of the water.
This is Tim Hendel with another format change, the third one I've reported on. The X-Band station 1670 WNWR in Warner Robins, Georgia, has dropped talk and is programming Spanish. The format seems to be modern Latin music, not Mexican ethnic music or salsa, but popular Latin ballads and semi-rock. So if you hear Spanish in the Southeast, it's Warner Robins, Georgia.
Let's get on to sports. And now I have Arena Football League to pass along to you. I got about a little over half the stations on the Internet. A lot of them gave me stories but wouldn't give me radio stations. So here's what I've gathered. The Atlanta, Georgia Force on 790 WQXI. The Austin, Texas Wranglers on 1300 KVET. The Chicago Rush on 105.9 WCKG. The Columbus, Ohio Destroyers, 107.1 WAZU. The Dallas Desperados, 1310 KTCK. The Denver, Colorado Crush on 630 KHOW. Grand Rapids, Michigan Rampage, not available. Kansas City Brigade, 97.3 KCXM. Las Vegas Gladiators, 920 KBAD. Los Angeles Avengers was not available. The Nashville Cats, 104.5 WKDF. The New York Dragons, not available in either newspaper. However, on Sunday, February the 12th, they and the Utah Blaze got involved in the highest scoring game in league history as New York beat Utah 84-81. The Orlando Predators were not available. The Philadelphia Soul was not available. The New Orleans Voodoo is taking the new year off because of the effects of Hurricane Katrina. The San Jose Sabercats on 680 KNBR. The Tampa Bay Storm on 620 WDAE. And the Salt Lake City, Utah Blaze on 1280 KZNS. By the time this tape reaches you, Major League Baseball exhibition games will be starting in Arizona and Florida. And checking my latest list here, the only changes that might be occurring would be in Oakland, where 610 KFRC changed to KEAR during this past year, and they have different format. So the games probably will be going elsewhere. And the Texas Rangers contract with 1080 KRLD has expired. So there might be a change there. And of course, St. Louis is on 550 KTRS. And I'll probably have update next month on what's going on. That's it for now. Any changes you're aware of, give me a call, 815-774-0184. Appreciate it. And I'll talk to you again next month and enjoy the football and the spring training baseball and whatever. Take care, friends. Good DX.
Coast to Coast AM is no whack job. UFO Seekers Search for Respect by Randy Dotinga. Omar is phoning from the future. I'm in the year 2063, he declares during an open lines segment on Coast to Coast AM, a nationally syndicated late-night radio show. Show host George Noori listens with the same respectful tone he uses whether callers have PhDs in microbiology or advanced degrees in wacko. "So what's going on?" he asks, getting an impenetrable answer about the decline of money. And then it's on to the usual calls about alien-human hybrids, spiritual visitations, and global conspiracies. But that's not all. Nuri combines the unexplained with something unexpected. In-depth chats with some of today's most respected scientists. An estimated 4.5 million listeners tune in to Coast each night, reportedly making the show number one in its time slot in cities from Los Angeles to Albuquerque, where it gets a whopping 22% of the audience, to San Diego, where it attracts more listeners than the next two most popular stations combined. 3 years after the departure of Coast to Coast host Art Bell, this bizarre brew of the strange and the serious appears to be on a roll, boasting nearly 500 affiliates, podcasts, and a satellite radio feed. I've brought in new topics, seeking more answers and the truth, says Nuri, 55. Will we have a cashless society? Will they try to put chips in us one day? That kind of dialogue has made us even more successful. Its popularity dipped severely several years ago after one of several departures by Bell, an unusual character who hosted the show from Pahrump, Nevada, not too far from Area 51. Bell still hosts the show on weekends, but ratings reportedly went up after the affable Nuri began hosting. Nuri, like Bell, talks about more than alien bases on the moon. Within the next few weeks, shows have examined bird flu, string theory, and computer security. One might assume mainstream scientists would steer clear of the show's guest list of astrologers and physics. In fact, many gainfully employed scientists and doctors make regular appearances. We need to go on that show, says Tess Gerritsen, a physician and best-selling novelist who has discussed death and forensic science on Coast to Coast. It's the way I feel about evolutionists and biologists, that they need to go and argue about creationism, she says. You need to go out and say there's another point of view. This is what science believes. Frequent guest Michael Shermer, publisher of Skeptic magazine, agrees. He appears on the show even though he devotes his life to battling the very things Coast to Coast stands for, the acceptance of time travel and premonitions, for example. We want to chase out bad ideas with good ideas, Shermer said, and just explain what science is. Why don't most scientists accept psychic powers as real or UFOs are real? Why do we have high standards of evidence before you accept something? And besides, many of the stories told on Coast to Coast are so outrageous that you have to really be a nincompoop to take the far-out stuff seriously, says Peter D. Ward, an author and paleontologist at the University of Washington. He appears on the show, which he views as entertainment with some good science in it. It helps that Nuri treats everyone with respect, even if they're skeptics. It's a non-confrontational show. At that hour of the night and into the morning, people don't want some show host screaming and yelling, Nuri said. They want to be informed and entertained. Well, the show is certainly entertaining. More than a few callers have outlandish stories to tell, and many of the guests aren't far behind. Tales of spiritual visitations are especially popular. The show transforms into Ghost to Ghost on Halloween, and more than a few callers claim to have seen the now infamous old hag lurking in their bedrooms. Show host Nuri is a believer in unexplained phenomena himself. He had an out-of-body experience as a young boy and remains fascinated by the paranormal. While he's skeptical of things like Ouya boards, saying, I don't know anyone who's had a good spirit come through that thing, and worrying about their connection to evil spirits, he's probably the last person to challenge callers with scientific theories about why they think they were abducted by aliens. Hey, if they think their dead grandmother is visiting them at night, more power to them. They don't need me telling them if it's true or not true, he said. There are those few people who may challenge the facts and say some of the stuff may not be true, but I say to them, chill out, relax, and have an open mind.
On the gateway to the West. Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM.
The article is entitled Coast to Coast AM is No Whack Job. This is Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service.
Thanks, Mark. You know what's nice about Coast to Coast AM also is the fact that the show starts about 5 minutes past the top of the hour and then concludes about 2 minutes till. So from 2 minutes till until five past, you have a little bit of time to dial around the top of the hour and see if you can catch any IDs or hear some DX, and then you can go right back to Brother George or Brother Art and listen to the rest of the show and don't get any DXing done. Oh, what can I say? I'd also like to say hi to Tom Danheiser and the folks at Premier who have so nicely supported the DX audio service over the years. Perry Crabill, W3HQX, reports that a 10-kilowatt transmitter near Hagerstown, Maryland, is transmitting digital signals on 455 kilohertz using FSK. These signals are getting into the 455 kilohertz IF of many AM receivers, not only in the immediate area, but also at some distances further away. This transmitter is at the site previously used for the Ground Wave Emergency Net, otherwise known as Project Gwen, and uses a 300-foot antenna tower. The digital signals are corrections for GPS receivers to provide greater positioning and elevation accuracy, similar to those operating in the 285 to 325 kHz Maritime Navigation Beacon Band. Stu Brenner of W3STU has provided a webpage with more details at http://ve3hls.tripod.com/noise/stu-458.html. This reference mentions another such installation operating at 458 kHz at Hawk Run, Pennsylvania. The designers of this system apparently did not give any adequate consideration to the interference potential of the frequencies selected. If you're into amateur radio as well as broadcast band DXing and listen to the top band, that is 160 meters, this final item might be of interest to you. It seems that the RSGB's initial GB2RS broadcast trials with WinDRM, a digital radio format, were a success and will now be repeated every Sunday. The following text is from the WinDRM email list. Recently, we undertook a digital trial test of GB2RS news broadcast. We're pleased to announce that this has proved to be a success. An experimental GB2RS digital voice news reading will now take place every Sunday at 2115 UTC until further notice on 1992 kHz upper sideband using the WinDRM standard. This mode occupies no more than 2.5 kHz bandwidth and is capable of providing high-quality audio under reasonable propagation conditions. If you're running Windows 2000 or XP on your PC, you should have no trouble downloading the free software from the Internet. Both the existing GB2RS MT63 USB data and the lower sideband analog voice transmission continues as usual on 80 and 160 meters. Please note that upper sideband is the default mode for amateur digital transmissions on all bands regardless of the analog voice mode conventions. More details can be obtained from the GB2RS News Manager. Just point your browser to http://www.rsgb.org. And before we close out this edition of the DX Audio Service, just a quick mention to thank some of our sharp DX Audio Service members who spotted the fact that we've been mailing the DX Audio Service cassettes out from Tampa, Florida for the past couple of months. This will be the last tape, the March edition, mailed from Tampa. Then it all comes back here to Lima. The reason for the change in mailing was kind of simple. We were thinking we were having some problems with the U.S. Postal Service, and we just wanted to check and see if it was the entire system, which is broke, or if it's just us here in Lima. And as it turns out, we've had a little bit of problems in different cities. So we're just going to continue to mail out from here, possibly mailing from other towns as I happen to pass through them just as a trial. But your DX Audio Service should be in your hands by the 10th of the month, and we'll see how things go from there. Well, that's it for this edition of the DX Audio Service. On our next edition, the April 2006 tape, we'll have details about the National Radio Club Convention, and again, it is our anniversary. So why don't you party with us? Have a virtual party. Invite some friends over to your house. Sit down and listen to some DX Audio Service tapes and just have a ball. Until next time, 73, good DX, and get out and support Radio.